After years of fine print contract and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if I have learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. Guys, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They don't have retail stores or salespeople. Instead, they deliver premium phone plans directly to you. I honestly thought the plans and pricing were too good to be true. I'm thankful I was wrong. The coverage and reliability with Mint Mobile has been superb. Say bye-bye to overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/chale. That's mintmobile.com/chale. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/chale. $45 up front. Payment required equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I recently started taking Morning Kick, used and created by former karate champion Chuck Norris. Guys, I've never felt better. By the way, have you seen Chuck lately? It's like he's aging backwards. This guy is still throwing kicks. He's full of energy, and he's in his 80s. This is why I jumped at the shot of taking his revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions. This drink combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other greens out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade, and it has hundreds of 5-star reviews. And by the way, I never tell you something tastes a certain way if it doesn't. It tastes just like strawberry lemonade. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother, my body looks leaner, I have energy all day, I just feel sharp. I want you to go to roundhouseprovisions.com/chale. Now, that's gonna save you up to 44% off the regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost in energy, and just an overall healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/chale today. What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Well, friends, Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial kickoff of summer is here in the United States. And coming up on today's show, I'm going to talk about the biggest fight of the summer, Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor. Why? Because Conor says he's done with the trash talk. Can you believe that? I'm also going to discuss whether I think he will ever fight for a title again, and if Dustin Poirier possibly is going to hang it up after UFC 302. That and many more stories coming up today. Let's start right now. I'm boxing Anderson Silva. Why? I had this question asked. In fact, I actually had it asked by Ben Askren, my own friend. So then I got to listen to it. I got to take it more serious. There's no promotion here. Like, when it's coming from a friend, it adds to the sincerity. He said, why are you boxing him? So let me stop you right there, because even though I'm name dropping Ben, I have seen that out there. Like, that question has come from, why are they boxing? Do you mean, when you say boxing, do you mean, why am I competing? Or do you mean quite literally, why am I boxing? And I get confused on it. I couldn't possibly care less what the rule set is. And never in my life could have. I've heard MMA fighters say, I only fight where places I can elbow. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know a jurisdiction's rules if you could do this or you can't. And I would never look into it. And I would never care. Like if I was going to tuck and run, just for example, like if my ego would allow me to tuck and run, I would not tuck and run and then come to you guys and tell you I tucked and run from a challenge. And then offer you the reason why. Well, because he told me I couldn't kick him in the shin, and you know how valuable that is to me. I just wouldn't do that. Maybe some people would. I'm sharing with you, I would not do that. If I tuck and run from a challenge, I tuck and run from a challenge, which, by the way, I don't know what I would do and I would never come and face you guys with, because in my life, that has never happened. I've accepted lots of fights, fought for 5 world championships. Apparently, good enough to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. I don't know what the rules were for those fights. And very seldomly in my life do I follow the rules anyway. I mean, if we're having a real candid conversation, what difference does it make what the rules are? What, I'm not going to follow them anyway. And I know that's a bit of a broad stroke. You say, well, you know, but your boxing. I don't understand that. I don't understand. I understand where certain techniques do matter and where this could be really helpful and where some of my strengths are. Like, I get all of that, but I wouldn't care more or less. My ego is on the line. We have a dispute and we have a way we're going to resolve it. Whether I liked it or that's suitable or favors me or not, we have a dispute and we're going to go resolve it. And I am not going to feel any better or hold my head any higher in defeat, no matter what the rules are. No matter the size of the ring, or did they put it in a cage, or were they 12-ounce gloves, or were they made in Mexico, or were they shipped in from China? Are they horsehair and all these other things that I hear people talk about? I don't know anything about. Is he Orthodox or is he Southpaw? I don't know anything about this stuff. Zero. None. There is no scenario you could lay out where I would work less hard, where I would take something less serious. But it goes the other way as well, where I would train harder or want it even more. We could thumb wrestle, we could arm wrestle, whatever the competition is, it's going to be a fight. And the number one thing that you're inspired to do is damage. He is going to try to hurt me. I'm going to try to hurt him. Now, I have my own personal reasons against Anderson. And I would imagine they're not even. I think about that man for the last 12 years, every single day at some point. I don't think he thinks about me. My experience with Anderson is the single most important piece of my career. Whether it means something to you or not, it was my career, it means something to me. And without him, it doesn't work. I don't know that he would have to say the same thing. He had other guys that he fought for titles. He had other guys that were main events. He had other pay-per-views that did really well. There's not a reason that he would have to think about me every day. I don't suggest that there is. I'm just letting you know I have thought about him. So when the opportunity presents itself, I will stop you right there. You don't have to tell me what the rules are. As soon as you use the word fight, I'm in. I had a guy online suggest that it should be a submission grappling match. That would make a lot more sense. And again, I don't begrudge, I don't know about these things, right? Like, you gotta teach me what a coward is. There's like things you have to explain to me. I can't relate. I don't know anything about it. It would make more sense to do a submission grappling, and your reasoning is because I have a grappling and a submission background. I don't get it. Are you projecting that you would agree to something if you were more likely to win and you wouldn't agree to it if you weren't? Because that would make you a bully. I don't bully. I do not take on guys or step into environments that I know I can win. I have never done that. I don't know anything about it. Follow the rules. When have I ever followed the rules? I mean, but I'm just saying, like, it's a weird thing, and I don't get it. And it's not as though Ben Askren's the only one to bring that up. My wife asked me this, what are you doing? And I said, honey, there's a code. And you'll understand or you won't. But I only have one way to explain this. I'm going to explain it to you. And whatever happens, happens though. Don't ask me a follow-up question. Here's the answer to your question. If there is ever a time that I am breathing air on this earth and that man wants to fight me, I must fight him. Not everybody, not anybody. I don't have to walk around and defend my honor. If that man ever asks me to fight him, I must fight him. And you either get that or you don't. And I wouldn't begrudge you either way. And if you wanted to step in the same career and you wanted to talk about rings and ropes and versus a cage, and is it big, is it small, and what are the rules, and can I do this, and I'll only do it where there's elbows, go do your thing. Go. That's not what's inside of me. And it never has been. Guy that I've always admired, man named Mark Schultz. And Mark Schultz is the younger brother to Dave Schultz. And Dave Schultz is just this legendary. They made a movie about him called Foxcatcher. And Mark Schultz fought Hicks and Gracie. And there was no cameras. In fact, to this day, there is no footage of that match anywhere. And the average person on the street isn't even going to know about it and or care. But everybody within our sport knows about it. And it's just one of the great stories of our sport. Mark Schultz has won everything you can win in wrestling. That's not exaggeration. There was not something in wrestling that was created when he was competing that he did not enter and win. So just imagine the states and the NCAAs and the worlds and the Olympics. I mean, just imagine. And then also everything else. He won them all. And there was 6 certified Gracie gyms in all of America. There was 5, as a matter of fact. They were opening number 6, and that was Pedro Sauer's gym in Utah. Very hard to find a black belt. Now you got one at your town. You got one, but not then. It's a really big deal. It was really rare, and there's only 6 Gracie-certified gyms. And when Hickson went to Utah to open up the gym and help to market for Pedro Sauer, one of the things that Hickson told the radio stations and the media that they could get is he could beat any man at any time under any rule set. And the media member said, well, not so fast. We actually got a guy in town. You're coming and saying you're the toughest guy. I challenge that you're even the toughest guy right here. We got a guy. And Hickson said, I could beat him. Hickson didn't know who it was, but he had an open challenge, and it could any time. This was part of the Gracie challenge, and Hickson stuck with it. You don't have to tell me what he's done. You don't have to tell me how big he is. You don't have to tell me anything. I can beat any man alive, and I will, on a moment's notice. So this DJ gets a hold of Mark Schultz. He calls him up, says, hey, man, we got a guy down here who wants to fight you. Mark had been retired since 88. There was no such thing as MMA, and Mark had never thrown a punch to any degree or even dreamed about this. He gets a phone call with someone on the other line that says, I want to fight you. And Mark said, meet me at the wrestling room at 3. He went straight to the wrestling room, and when he gets in, now Mark's all worked up. And by the way, he thinks it's going to be him and just this guy that called him. Doesn't matter. You came to my town, you called me. You either understand that code or you don't, and most don't. But I'm just telling you, this is a guy that inspired me. If you wonder why I have this kind of mentality, well, these are the guys that I looked up to. So when Mark gets to the wrestling room, he can pull this guy's jugular out. I don't know what that means. I think that's only in the movies. But when Mark tells a story, this guy made a big mistake. And when Mark gets there, he can't even get into the room because it's so full of people. Mark doesn't know this went around and was on the radio. He doesn't know there's a promotion. So he gets through all these people, and when he gets in, boom, there's Hickson. And right before the fight, Hickson told him the rules. It had something to do with what you could do to the face. I want to say you could only open hand the face. But there were certain rules. You couldn't bite. There were certain rules. Which to a guy that had never done this and got challenged and is planning to pull out your jugular changes everything. No matter how ridiculous that plan is to literally go for the throat, no matter how ridiculous it is, it was still his plan, and it still just got taken from him. He had no idea there was any rules. Mark didn't know in a fight there's rules. In fact, he thought the whole definition of fight was that there was no rules. So now's his moment, right there. I'm out. That's not what you said, and that's not what I came here for. Or you shake hands and you go. And he shook hands and he went. You understand that, or you don't. Got a new opponent, Khalil Rountree, going through his red tape, got to serve his 60 days, so Khalil's not going to be able to fight. And what's interesting, quick turnaround for Jamal Hill's opponent, but that's not the story, at least for me. The story is they got the co-main. And why is that relevant? Because that means Ian Garry did not. And that's been kind of the hot topic of the week. Is Ian Garry going to get co-main on Conor? And by the way, from a promotional standpoint, is that wise? Is that going to help to shine Garry and elevate a guy that's got about 10 years left? He's got a massive shelf life in this industry, and we've seen nothing that would stop your belief that this is a future champion. Is that good for him to have all those eyeballs? Or do all of a sudden you start sharing the room? Right? And that's a concept very few get. Very, very few people understand this. So Jamahal Hill is going to go into the co-main event, which lets us know. We don't have to keep on doing this back and forth. Is Garry going to get on the card? And we've heard every rumor from Colby. I know MVP was rumored. In fact, that was one that Garry himself started. I think we can stop. We're not going to put Garry on the card any lower than co-main event. Now, that sounds right, doesn't it? Everything I just said, does that sound right? The idea of how difficult it is to have two stars at the same time. It's a very fascinating law in promotion. And it doesn't get recognized by many very often. But there's a reason that when you had Stone Cold and The Rock competing at the same time, and they were 1 and 2, and they flipped that back and forth every week, and their merchandise was 1 and 2, and they flipped that back and forth. There was a reason you didn't put Stone Cold and The Rock on the same card unless you were putting Stone Cold against The Rock. And the answer is just the demotion. You ever want to demote a guy? Take his great big star, and you go, God, who's bigger? Is The Rock bigger or Stone Cold? Oh, wow, I don't even know who I like more. Wow, these are big. Have a card, have it come out, put one of them as a co-main. There's your answer. Nobody in the world that's on the fence goes, God, I like Stone Cold, and I like The Rock, I got to flip a coin. Who would I like more? Nobody goes with the co-main guy. Not if you're on that fence. I'm just sharing with you. Now, obviously, Garry isn't in the position of Conor, but it's still one of these questions. Is it wise to put them on the same card? Is it wise to hold a press conference and have two guys that are two of your only guys that can handle themselves on a stick side by side? Or should you spread out what is otherwise a miserably boring and painful proposition known as a press conference into two that are now at least obtainable? But these are questions you have to ask. The media, I can't tell you how many times they've danced on the UFC's grave. I could not tell you. I remember when they happened. To go way back when Tito said he wasn't going to fight there anymore. There was media that was, they're done. Without Tito, this can't be done. And then Randy Couture, at the same time as, it was just months apart, said so long. And a very big deal, there was a period of years where if there was a pay-per-view, for sure, it was only a matter if Tito was going to headline or if Randy was going to headline it. And they would go, back and forth. And if you didn't have Tito, or you didn't have Randy, you just knew right away you weren't going to have this great night of business. Now, you could fast forward that to Ronda Rousey. And when Ronda decides that she's going to leave, you should have heard the media. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? Oh, my God, next year is going to be so hard for the UFC, and they're out there booking venue. I can't believe it. They're going to lose so much money. This sport is going to be done. And it was to the point where these people would actually ask Dana. That's how sincere they were. That's the level of belief that they had. And they're looking in the right direction, right? This is a star-driven business. That's true. And you must have people that other people find interesting to watch them compete, to hear what they have to say. You do have to have that. The part that the media missed, and the part that the public missed from the time Tito and Randy said, I'm done, to Ronda said, I'm not going to do it anymore, to the threats of Conor not continuing to fight. The concept that the media misses is the fans don't diminish. They just go somewhere else. As soon as one of those stars goes away, their fans don't leave the sport with them. Their fans keep watching. They just need someone else to jump on. And when that person gets to, the fan doesn't retire with them either. The fan stays. I can just tell you from my personal perspective. Frank Yeager is my favorite fighter. And Frankie announced when his last fight was going to be. And then he had the fight. And sure enough, Frankie retired. But my days of being a fan don't leave with Frankie. I've just got to find a new guy. I got to find a new guy that then becomes my favorite fighter. So it's one of these concepts that is very difficult. It's very difficult to manage. And the decisions that get made, they're very difficult. And you got to look at everything. In the ultimate microcosm, you want to break everything down to the absolute smallest as you can. Everything. The vote for the presidency, if you could break that down to the national, and then you got the state, and you've got the electoral, but if you could break that down to one person's living room, boom, there's your microcosm. What does that person need to hear? What are the hot topics right now? Which way are you going to vote? Like, you can expand it all the way on out. So when you have a live gate that is already sold out, and you don't have Ian Gary on the card yet, I understand the live gate is just one piece of business, but it is the smallest microcosm that you can narrow things down to. If you want to know how the pay-per-view is going to do, you could do Google searches and algorithms, and you can listen to guys that lie like Dave Meltzer, that they have some kind of an algorithm. You could do all of those things. But if you had the ability to see what your live gate is and to track the trends of live sales, did it bounce? Was it faster? If you could track those trends, there is no way to estimate what your pay-per-view would be that is better than that. There is no analysis. And you'll get plenty of guys that walk in the room and try to confuse you. And you'll even get people that get a corner office and they get hired by the boss because he fell for it. But none of their analysis and none of their algorithms would be more valuable than just having access to that. And the gate was already sold. So why and what evidence would you believe that you need more star power? It's a very reasonable question by me. And it looked as though it might be going in that direction. And even if it wasn't a dollar and cents idea, you also have a long-term play of getting Gary, a future star, that looks like he's going to be a champion someday. Got a great big shelf life. And is the smartest guy in the room, does he see a value in plugging him in there, or does he see a value in waiting? I just think it's an interesting topic. That's all. I think it's a fascinating concept. In this sport, it's all dominoes. A lot of times we'll be sitting around going, okay, who's going to get the next title shot? Or who's this guy going to fight next? It's one of these things where we're sitting and then we start debating, we start having a conversation, and it's a whole lot of fun. And that guy that we're debating and arguing about never gets announced. He never gets a fight. He didn't even get a headline. But a different guy does. And so when that guy come off the board, it changes the players and it lets you start to see the future. It lets you start to see what's out there and who's going where. I love that Jamal got this spot. He worked for it, he campaigned for it, took the big risk at 300, didn't go his way, got right back on the horse. They changed his opponent. Like, nothing about this is ideal for Jamal Hill. And in typical Jamal Hill fashion, he never once flinched. Just made the most interesting comment, and this was on accident. Like, nobody's talking about this. I feel like people missed this. Leon does an interview, and he was talking about what's been going on between he and the UFC, which are always private talks. Like, we never really get to hear about that. And fighters don't tell you, not because they're asked to keep it a secret. They don't know it's interesting. They don't know that's really compelling if you get a text message from Dana, or if Dana called you with an idea. Like, they don't know that that's interesting. So we seldomly hear. But Leon, getting ready for Lahal, fighting on Manchester, going to be the main event. Tom Aspinall underneath him. Tom has not fought in England and not been the main event in years. I mean, it's a very meaningful story. And even if you think, well, it's process and it's undisputed versus interim, I don't really care about that. Leon is going to main event over Tom. It's a compliment. The end. Patty the Batty on the card. Probably the biggest draw on the card. Well, Leon's going to main event. It's a big deal, right? Nobody's a star until they're a star. I love to remind you guys that weren't around to watch Chuck Liddell's rise, but there was a period of time where being a grown man with a mohawk was weird. And then Chuck became the most recognizable face in the world for MMA. Of any MMA fighter whose picture you could hold up and go, who's this? Chuck, more people would say, that's Chuck Liddell than any other fighter. And people began to go as Chuck Liddell on Halloween. Right? So the mohawk that was weird is now so cool people are dressing up. They began making dolls. Mohawk. People, they started putting Chuck in commercials. Mohawk. I'm just sharing for you. Like, you're not a star until you're a star. You're just not. I feel as though Leon is right there. And I can just say from personal experience, I am more interested, invested in Leon than I ever have been. And he owes Colby Covington that, by the way. Colby will never get credit for that, but that's where you have to tie it back to. I mean, that's just me. That's even me personally speaking and being more interested in Leon now than I ever was. Does tie back to the press tour and the fight on December 16th with Colby. I think a lot of you guys can relate. But what's been going on in the meanwhile? And Leon didn't do a great job of making himself front and center in that. That's not his method. And I bring that to you because you can still get to the same destination. Khabib was a hard name to say from a place that we don't know is part of Russia or it's not. And a mediocre fighter with a weird hat. That's a real time. I lived through that time. Can you guys even imagine? Especially you new fans picked up 4 or 5 years ago. Could you even imagine Khabib just blending in with the crowd? The biggest Muslim athletic star on earth. Maybe the most popular fighter. I don't know. Could he outdraw Conor? I don't know. But him and Conor together, they set the record. Could Khabib done it without? I mean, it's one of these things. And for a while, he was the guy with a hard name from a place called Dagestan, which we didn't know is part of Russia or it's not. And it actually depends who you ask. Oh, and then by the way, don't bother learning how to say Nurmagomedov because the guy with the weird hat isn't going to be around anyway. Khabib had one fan. It was a girl who called herself Mini Khabib, showed up to press conferences and wore the same hat that he did. Can you even believe that? Can you even believe that? And the reason I tell you that is Khabib, Chuck Liddell, and now Leon, if he gets there, would have taken the same path, which is the long road. They didn't know some of the shortcuts. They didn't embrace it. And Chuck Liddell did know them. He refused to do them. Just part of his loyalty and the culture to Coach Hackelman, who was a traditionalist. You bow. You respect that opponent. You don't say one thing about him. Before or after, right? It was this different belief system. And Chuck made it to the absolute heights. Khabib made it to the absolute heights. And I'm just watching Leon. And you need wins, right? None of this happens without wins. But I feel like Leon's on his way. And what has happened between December 16th, the night he got out of the cage with Colby, and now is interesting. And Leon set it down. He set it down in an interview and nobody picked up on it. So let me run it by you. Let me run by you if you think this is interesting. He talked about Blahal. And Leon wanted the fight. Between December 16th and that fight getting announced, and it was only announced 2.5 weeks ago, guys. It was announced 2 weeks ago. That's not that long. So between December 16th and, let's back it up, 2 weeks. He was in, talking about Leon, he was in conversations with the UFC. And looking for opponents, right? He's trying to get himself a job. You're a prize fighter. You got to fight to get the prize. So Leon was out there trying to get himself a job. Smart. Before an announcement comes, Leon cared enough about his career to get a hold of the organization and try to plant his own seeds. Now, we can debate if he was going in the right direction or the wrong. It doesn't matter. The mere fact that he was doing that, that's great. I didn't know Leon did those kinds of things. This was great to hear and find out that he does. And when he was setting down the things that he's been up to since post-fight, December 16th, he said, looking for an opponent and asking the UFC about Blahal Muhammad and for Blahal Muhammad specifically was one of the things that he did. And that he was told by the UFC, Blahal is not available. And I love that. Because I've gotten the perception that Leon doesn't want the fight. I have seen Blahal beg for it, lobby for it, campaign for it, put his name and his face next to the request, show up at Vince, do the media tour, and get brushed off. I've seen that happen. But because I've seen that happen, and it's all that I've seen, I made an assumption that Blahal wanted the fight and that Leon didn't. And I don't use the word scared. I mean, I'll throw it out sometimes, but I try not to use it. You say scared to represent a number of things that just means that you don't want it. I couldn't possibly call Leon scared to fight Blahal, considering he's already fought in Blahal. But I wouldn't be surprised, right? You put yourself in somebody else's shoes. I wouldn't be surprised if Leon didn't want to fight the same guy. I wouldn't be surprised if Leon wanted to move on. He had to fight Kamaru Usman 3 times, for goodness sakes. Now he's going to be in there with Blahal twice. Well, you got 5 fights and only 2 stories to tell your grandkids. Like, I would understand that. And I thought that maybe it was something more like that. Like, when Blahal was calling him and it wasn't happening, I wasn't really thinking that Leon was scared, is my point. I was thinking, but for some reason, and perhaps just the parody alone, he doesn't want that fight. So now to find out that not only did he want it, he's actually asked for it. Oh, boy, how that changes everything, doesn't it, guys? Doesn't it? And if I'm finding that out, because he accidentally set this down on an interview that I feel everybody missed, how do you think Blahal responded? And Blahal, I hope that you answer me. If you send me a video, I'm going to use it on my channel, Blahal. I would love it. But even if you want to do it on yours, I would like the answer to that. Did that change things in Blahal's mind? Did it make him more excited, less excited? Did it take a confidence away because he thought this guy was scared of him and all of a sudden? But I'm just asking. Like, words matter. Intents matter. As you're staring at a scenario, right? And you're getting your troops. You're coming up with your game plan. You're the general. Well, Blahal Muhammad is the general of that camp. What does he think now that he has new information? Does it change anything to find out that behind the scenes, Leon was not trying to duck him? In fact, it's the very match that Leon wanted. I'm just asking. I'd be curious. It was a piece of news we didn't have. And I had a producer tell me, hey, Chael, if you go say that, but Leon made it all up, you're going to look like a fool. It's like, no, I'm not. First of all, I don't think that Leon made it up. But if Leon did, that would be what we call a troll. And trolling is incredibly effective for promotion. I mean, Leon seems to be a guy that is not going to come out and do that. He's not going to come, right, the Chuck Liddell, the Khabib examples that I gave, he's not going to take that path. But if I found out that he did, I would love it. So I believe that story absolutely happened. I'm just sharing with you to answer my producer's question. If it didn't happen, we don't look bad over here, guys. We're still learning something new about Leon, which means Blahal is learning something new about Leon. I really hope Blahal responds. I trust that it's a simple answer, but I still want it. What did he think when he found out the champion behind the scenes and quietly was doing the same thing that he was doing? Blahal was doing it in front of the scenes. Leon was doing it behind the scenes. There's my question. What do you say, Blahal? Guys, when I started podcasting, an online store was the furthest thing on my mind. But now, we're selling Bad Guy Ink merchandise. That includes coffee. That includes t-shirts. Go get yourself a sticker if you would like. And you know what? It's very easy. And that's all because we use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you to sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's where you go to help your business grow. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel or selling custom accessories, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and wherever you're selling from, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers and the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I appreciate about Shopify is no matter how big you grow, you don't have to feel overwhelmed by the demand. Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/chale right now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/chale. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. As spring makes its way into summer, there will be more outdoor festivals and concerts happening all around us. And if you're in the market for some new attire, let Tecovas help you out. A great pair of Western boots will elevate a casual look or add a refined flair that'll draw both eyes and compliments. I've seen some youngsters out there pull off wearing a nice pair of Tecovas ostrich boots with shorts. I've worn mine to a UFC event with a full suit head to toe. There is no limit to how you can wear a pair of boots, and the best way to shop for boots is at your local Tecovas store, where you're going to be greeted by the smell of fresh leather and a friendly smile. Go on in, grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop the latest styles. Tecovas also offers custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or fine leather goods. Visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, TECOVAS.com. And don't go gently, y'all. Conor McGregor has come out. He says he wants to fight 3 more times this year. So that would mean do the Chandler fight and have 3 more, get a total of 4 fights. So who would you give him? All right, there's a fun topic. Who would you give Conor? If you've got the power, and you might as well book him in advance. Like Conor's not a situation like everybody else that's not named Conor, where you have to see the outcome of the previous fight. The outcome of the previous fight wouldn't have anything to do with who you would give Conor next, at least not up to this point in his career. So go ahead and book him. Go ahead and tell me who are the two guys you want to see him with. And I'll give you my answers. RDA Colby Covington. And I don't do that with a great promotional push behind it. I give the RDA fight with heart. I think that RDA has had the hardest schedule of anyone that's ever done this sport. I really think that. And he was supposed to have the Conor fight. He signed for it. He trained for it. He prepared. In fact, at the time, he was the one putting up the belt. It would have been for his championship. That fell apart. Insert Eddie Alvarez. The rest is history. RDA never got that match. So I would put RDA on, right? If I had the power to do this, I would put RDA on. And I've heard a lot of other people put Max. I don't have the problem with the Blessed Express. Plus, if it's going to be for a title, I think that it is more obtainable to do it for a BMF title than an Undisputed title, just for example. But I feel like the people that are saying Max are coming at it from a competitive standpoint. Just, this is the competition. Get Max back in there. He fought Connor once. It was before he was met. Let him get his due. I don't disagree with any of that. Like, that would be a really good night of business. It just wouldn't offer parity. And if I had the power to make fights for Connor, I would for sure have parity. Like, Dustin Poirier versus Connor, that's great. I would really enjoy that. But if I had the power to make his next fights, and it was going to happen, like this magic wand type scenario, I wouldn't put him in there with Dustin because I've only seen that. In fact, I've seen that 3 times. So, and Colby, I just think it's a lot of fun. I mean, I'll just leave it at that. But before we go down the road of who we should do for Connor, why is Connor saying it? It's one of these things, like if you're ever going to study the business of this sport, which so few do, they're for sure are not 10 people that are actively in MMA that study the business of the sport. For sure, there's not 10. In fact, I only know of 3. And if you are going to do that, is that something that you find interesting, which I do, every little move that Connor makes is something to be stared at. And you then wonder why he did it. And most guys, if you were to ask them how many times you want to fight this year, they would throw an answer out. They might even throw out some names. But Connor doesn't do that. So, I ask you again. When Connor comes out and he does an interview and says he wants the Chandler fight and 2 more. I know earlier I said it was 3 more. My producers corrected me. Wants 3 fights this year. Why would he be doing it? Well, let's try to put it in conjunction. All we're going to do is a guess, but I'll lay out mine. 2 days ago, it gets revealed that Connor's got 2 fights left on his contract. And standard, what would happen is an athlete would be in a renegotiation with the company if the company wanted to keep that athlete around with 1 fight left. And it's a very exciting day. Like in your whole career, and this is if you have a good career, you're going to have that meeting 3 times. 3 times you'll be able to sit down. You'll hope to have some level of leverage. You'll hope that the timing works out. Oh, by the way, it's a huge gift. Like when they present you with what their offer is for a new contract, it always escalates. It always goes up. You don't know how much or where it's going to be. It's just a really fun day. That's all I'm suggesting for you. Connor revealed to us that he's in that spot now, that they picked up the phone, that they've called him, that they're starting that dialogue. Oh, and by the way, he has 2 fights left. So why is Connor saying he wants to fight 3 times? Is it because he does? Maybe. I'll take you back to a time. I think it was 2020. COVID made me throw things off. I used to be real good with this, but it was December. Connor comes out, does an interview out of nowhere and says, I'm going to be fighting in Vegas next month, which meant January. The problem? The UFC didn't have a show. They didn't have a camera. You talk about lights, camera, action. They had none of the above. They scrambled, put it together, insert Donald Cerrone, 170-pound weight class so that nobody had to figure out how to make weight on that short of notice, and sold out overnight. From when they announced we're going to have a show with Conor McGregor to the next day, over, it was gone. You couldn't even get in. Tickets were gone. But I bring you to that time phrase. Conor looked amazing. He stops Cowboy. I mean, this is like a hero moment if there ever was one. If there was a way to raise a guy up or what a little kid would dream of getting in this business so that maybe it could happen to him someday. This was the moment. It was unbelievable. And Connor stated to anyone that would listen, I want to fight 3 more times this year. That would be a total of 4 fights. Guys are guaranteed 3. Connor had been giving us 2. I mean, I'm just putting this in perspective for you. Like, it was a really big deal, but he said he wanted 3 more. Oh, by the way, it was January. Like, to get a guy 3 more fights in a year when you did one in January, it worked out. With the calendar, it worked. You could do it. And I think if we were to look back at any mistake that we as an industry made, it's that we didn't take Connor up on that. I would think there's always stuff behind the scenes that you don't see or don't know about, but I would think that that's a mistake to not use Connor when Connor's healthy and says that he wants to do it. And you know what predicated this? There was things going about the tabloids of bad habits or activities that Connor was finding himself in. And he got asked that question directly by Ariel Helwani, and Connor didn't answer it. But he did tell Ariel, it wouldn't confirm that he had done it, but he did tell Ariel, not doing it now. And then he went a little bit further. And he said, and I won't, as long as I'm staying active. As long as I got fights and I'm in camp and I got a focus and my eye on the ball, which is another reason he stated that he wanted a total of 4 fights. It was for different reasons, but it wasn't totally dissimilar to what Volkanovski shared with us after his second fight with Islam. So we didn't take him up on it, though. And I have to use that. I have to use that piece as evidence. Like Connor coming out and saying, I want more fights. Before we all get excited and think it's going to happen, we got to look back and go, okay, he said this before. Did he get them? No. And I don't know why he didn't. I don't know why. But I can't help but look at his statement right now in conjunction with the idea that he's in contract renegotiations. I can't have that and not assume that it was part of the negotiation. I just can't. I can't hear that and assume that he's out there and wants to take on a full schedule and Connor's back and go ahead and book him. I just can't. I think it's part of the play. And I don't know what part of the play is. And by the way, I don't put it down. I'm sharing with you. If you study the business, which people don't, this is a play of some sort. Now, it could be the very obvious one, and you should not take it with a grain of salt. It's very straightforward. Connor is saying he wants to fight multiple times this year because Connor would like to fight multiple times this year. Like, that's certainly on the table. I just don't think it's the reason. I don't. He doesn't have a weight class. He's apparently fighting Chandler at 170. There's been some reports that says like 168. I don't really know where that came from, but I also don't know what difference it makes. If you're 255 pounders and you're not weighing at 55, it doesn't matter if you weighed at 191. If you're not going to affect the class and the rankings there, like what difference does it make? So, but I say that to you, if you're trying to line up Connor, you wouldn't even know where to start. Don't even know what weight class he is. In fact, to go back to what Connor said he would like to do a fight at the Sphere opposite Nate Diaz. And he would like to do that on Mexican Independence Day. Now, that is very consistent. Connor has constantly called out Diaz, and he's constantly said he wants to fight at the Sphere. I don't know the relevance to the Sphere. I just know he's been consistent. But if it was Connor versus Nate on Mexican Independence Day, a show being done by a North American company in North America, and you didn't feature a Mexican in the main event, I don't know. I feel like it's probably not a likely thing to happen. But if it is something that's important to Connor and he's in a new contract negotiation, he could definitely get it. But what advantage and or power would Connor have by staying active, by staying busy, creating the illusion while in a negotiation that he wants to stay active and he wants to stay busy? That's the real question. And if you're studying these types of things, it's important, even if a hypothesis, but it's important that you make one. Conor McGregor, I am going to stop trash talk. It does not serve me well. Wow. That's a quote. That's what Conor said. It's going to stop all trash talk. It doesn't serve me well. And I so badly wanted him to add to that. What does he mean? And when did he trash talk? And far more importantly, when did he realize that? When did he come to the mind that it was harming him as opposed to helping him? And I'd love to have all of those things answered. And I know maybe they sound simplistic, but the greatest entertainer, the greatest talker in all of sport, not just ours, is Conor McGregor. And he did that by speaking. I mean, he had actions and he had a look, and there was a number of pieces of flair there as you look at the pie, but number one was verbal. So when I think of Conor, I do think of a great talker. but a trash talker. I have not thought of him like that. In fact, I'm going through my mind right now and I'm trying to think of a time that he talked trash. I know he was very hard on Jose Aldo, but that was a period of time ago. So I fully admit that there's things that I've forgotten. But and the trash talk is a little bit interesting too, right? Like you could have a different definition. Before you tell me it's anything that you say that's aggressive and or what could be perceived as negative, okay. If that's what it means, then of course I do understand you. I just thought it meant where it wasn't true and you were doing to talk trash, to be mean. Trash is bad. Trash is dirty. You're doing something that's not true, automatically kind of puts you in that dirty, bad phase, and then you start saying something negative. I understood a lot of what Connor said, and whether he convinced the world, I also understood it as the originator of that talk, that the deep down secret is you're trying to convince yourself. And the double down secret is you can do just that. You for sure can talk yourself into something. You guys will hear the term brainwashing. You hear something enough times, you start to believe it's true. But every time you've ever heard brainwashing in your life, it was associated with something bad. Brainwashing very much is true, where if you hear something enough times, you will believe it. That's true. It can just be used for good. It can be used with positive messages, too. Let me give you a great example. Connor was picking a fight with Floyd. He didn't have it yet. And when Connor was laying out his case, and one of the biggest dismissals of Connor versus Floyd was that Connor had never boxed. And Floyd had never been beaten at boxing, right? I mean, it's one of these things. I'm talking professional. But and Connor was laying out his case. I remember where he was when he did it. He looked cool. He was in this suit. He brought this car in. It was a one-night show. And it was Ariel Helwani on a stage in what I believe is England. That part I could have wrong because Bisping went and did one too. So it was just Connor and Ariel. But Connor said when he was talking about Floyd and talking about beating him and trying to let people know why this was interesting and why he had a chance. He didn't bring up the fact that he was a southpaw and Floyd had struggled with southpaws. That was done by other people. Connor simply said, Floyd's got a little head and I got a great big hand. And then he elaborated on that to say, no, take an average person's head. Floyd's is smaller than the average person that weighs what he weighs. Take the average person's hand at our weight class and then look at mine. I have an abnormally large hand to an abnormally large head. It is like a hammer and a nail. I'm going to hit him one time. I have no idea if the size of your head dictates your ability to take a punch. I have no idea if the size of your hand dictates an ability to deliver a punch. All I know is Connor laid that out and it made sense. I've remembered all these years later. Partly because I wonder if it was so, but I wouldn't consider that trash talk if it in fact was accurate. I never measured Floyd's head. Never measured Connor's hand. I never juxtaposed that against other people. What I'm sharing with you is I don't know that that's trash talk. As Connor's trying to talk himself into it, talking about MMA is a real fight. I come from the real rules of a fight. You don't. You just use the word. You have an element of what I do. You are not a fight. That is accurate, by the way. I mean, for boxing to call itself a fight, wrestling or a jiu-jitsu term would have that exact same claim. And you'll meet grapplers that call it a fight. They're looked at as dorks. I just share that I don't think Connor was talking trash. I thought that that was accurate. It would go into a different category. I remember Connor getting ready to fight Eddie Alvarez. He kept saying he's stiff. He's too stiff. I will admit I don't know what that means. But after the fight and the fact that Connor won and continued to say, I hit him and I hit him hard and I hit him clean and he thinks I'm fast, but it's only because he's stiff, makes me think that it was accurate and therefore not trash talk. So as I go down that road, like, I don't know that I want Connor to stop. And when he says it doesn't serve me well, what does he mean? Did it backfire? Is he talking about the comments that he made his last moments in the cage, which would be the Dustin Poirier fight number 3, the leg injury and Joe Rogan down on the canvas interviewing him? Is that what he meant when he went after Jolie, Dustin's wife? Is that what he meant? And he got so much pushback after that that he, hey, I mean, do the words on the internet affect him too? Because most of the greats want to come out and tell you, they even want to preach to kids, oh, don't worry about it, social media, don't ignore these things, and you got to just believe in yourself and keep your chin high. They all say it, I don't know why. I don't know why they say it. It isn't true. But this would be the ultimate proof that it isn't true. I mean, if it's a big if, but if Connor is affected by that backlash to the point that he's going to change his behavior. Wow. It's interesting. And when he says it doesn't serve me well, he has waiting for him. It doesn't become official till the door is open. But he has waiting for him the largest live gate in MMA history. And it's not because of his training. And it's not because of his punching or kicking. Because of the excitement that he built around all of that. And he did it by talking. But that doesn't have to mean he was talking trash. Do you see where I'm getting hung up on this term? Like, can we expect Connor to stop doing as much media? Can we expect him to stop being so fun? Can we expect him to stop being the life of the party? I hope not. I think that all served him very well. And he didn't say, I'm going to stop all talk. He said, I'm going to stop trash talk. I'm just wondering what that means. Like, what does that mean as it pertains to Michael Chandler? What did Connor say that was trash? And I'm trying to pick apart that answer because I'll be very disappointed. Like, if Connor's saying, hey, I'm all done with media, this is it, putting a bow in it, I would be very, really disappointed. Connor is one of the rare guys that can monetize with something aside from the performance. Like, every fighter is an interchangeable mediocrity. They simply don't matter. There's five guys on the roster that matters. And I know how rude that is. I get it. But as you're looking forward to Connor, you're looking at fight week, you got this $20-plus million gate. Let's just say, Chandler might be my favorite fighter, but to prove a point, let's say we took Chandler out and we put somebody else in. Do you see how your excitement, or you looking forward, or those ticket holders that could get a refund, do you see it? We would not expect any of that to happen. We expect everybody to continue to show up, to the media to stay just as involved. And that's just an example on that fight. There's four other guys that can make money, and the five of them together keep the lights on. And all 773 other ones are interchangeable mediocrities because they don't know how to monetize anything other than their performance. That's the only commodity that they have, and Connor is different. So I'd be very disappointed if he stopped talking. Now, he didn't say he was, though. He said he's going to stop trash talking. And I got to tell you, in all fairness, and I know I'm a Connor denier. I know that I defend whatever Connor does, I come out and defend it. I do get that about myself, but I feel it always represents a greater good. I feel what he did from an entertainment aspect and the attention, the eyeballs that he brought in, that positivity outweighs a perceived negativity. And if by some off chance, Connor thinks that the words and the interviews are not what's bringing in that $20-plus million gate, that instead it is his pugilistic abilities, somebody needs to grab a hold of him, splash some cold water on his face, and tell him, do not ever stop talking. Came out, he says he doesn't want to fight Connor again. He said, that ship has sailed. All I want is the lightweight title. I don't need any bad energy in my life. Now, right, you got to look at everything, because everything's a negotiation. When these guys come out in public, these top guys, these main eventers that are making a bunch of money, it's because they know everything's a negotiation. So you have to wonder what's sincere and what's a play. And this was an interesting comment by Dustin, because he's going to have massive media around him. He does right now, but he's going to have that all the way up until that Islam fight. And when that fight ends, win or lose, the media goes away for a period of time. I mean, it's just a cycle, right? You have the fight on Saturday, regardless of who wins. Everybody flies home on Sunday. The media cycle runs on Monday, but by Tuesday, you're already moving on to what's next, not what is behind you. So if you want to strike when the iron's hot, it's now. You've got the cameras now. If you want to set something up for the future, now is the time to do it, which makes me believe that Dustin is being rather sincere. Now, a guy's got the right to change his mind, and a guy can only make decisions on the options that he has. But if Dustin is not open to a Conor fight, like if that was a literal statement, could this be Dustin's last fight? Is that at all reasonable? Could this be Dustin's last fight? Dustin Poirier has convinced me that he is a gritty competitor who set a goal at some point over a decade ago, become world champion, and he is going to sacrifice and work towards that dream. And if he were to lose to Islam, a reasonable person would understand that Dustin is not going to get another title fight just because of his age, right? So if you understand that, and if that is the great motivation that's being taken away, does he want to do the sport again? With a loss, would he want to do the sport again? He's a huge draw. It'd be really big fights. He can fill up arenas. People would love to see him. Does he want to do it again? If everything that's ever motivated him and kept him disciplined and kept him going forward is because he's on a path, no matter what winds it has to take, he's still on a path too. And if he ever accepts and realizes that that dream isn't going to come true, can he and will he set a new dream? And it's a really big test. Like, no one would know. You couldn't go to Dustin and then get the right answer. He won't know. Nobody knows for themselves until they're put into that spot. But the idea that Dustin is turning down Conor, at least publicly and at least through the media, which is his greatest way of getting Conor, is to use the public and use the media. And he's not taking it. He's passing on that. It does show us how focused and determined he is to win this belt and to beat Islam. And that's an interesting thing. Where Dustin's mind at is everything. And he's very strong. He is stronger than most alive. And he's proven that time and time again. But it's a battle of will. While it's presented to the audience as a battle of the punches and kicks, the athletes know, I'm trying to break you mentally. Not physically. I'm not trying to hit you here and hit you here. I'm trying to hit you here and hit you here to make your mind change and make you give up. And when you do change your mind and you do give up, you're only going to do it for a half of a second. And I need the referee to see that half a second and break the fight. I mean, that's what this sport is. Like when the tough guys break and they fall apart, they don't stay there. They come right back. You got to get rid of them when that door opens. And I'm sharing that because seeing that this isn't about business to Dustin is interesting to me. To see it's not about fame is interesting to me. And that's one thing that a guy could say. Another thing to demonstrate it. The fact that Dustin right now is turning down his greatest opportunity to get Conor shows me a sincerity. The fact that Dustin was willing to go out against Saint Denis in his home adopted city in a non-main event spot. Right? Lots of guys would say they want it. Lots of guys would say, I'll do anything to achieve my goal. But then a few guys actually do it. Would you? If you were a top five star in the entire industry, to the point that the industry needs you, it's a very rare thing to say. Would you risk it all against a guy named Saint Denis in a co-main event spot? And the answer is no, you probably wouldn't. Even if you think you would, your managers would probably stop you. Your coaches would probably stop you. Your ego would get in the way. You'd find a way, your elbow, your shoulder would start to hurt. You'd do what all the guys do, but it wouldn't have made the walk. Dustin did. And then he started losing. And then a round ended, and he did lose it. And another round ended, and he did lose it. And then a guillotine didn't work, and he tried it again and again. And we can make all the jokes that we want, but he stayed in the fire, and he stayed focused, and he found a way. And that's the Dustin Poirier story. See, that's where it comes down to the mental. And you make a guy change his mind. You're the most mentally tough guy. But at some point, you got to get him to change his mind, even if it's for a millisecond. And I just haven't seen that millisecond. I haven't seen that changing of the mind. I haven't seen Dustin relinquish the grasp that he's got, right? It's very interesting to me. And I do think that it's worth discussing. Could this be Dustin's last fight? And then what happens if he wins? Does that change things? I mean, does he got a whole bunch of guys and he wants to go and defend it and he wants to take on that schedule? Or is this a boy's dream and he finally made it? He's going to hug the belt up and he's going to walk off into the sunset. We don't see that very often, but we have seen it. George St. Pierre did it twice. Khabib did it. We didn't even accept when he tried to give the title back. He gave the belt back, wouldn't hold it, wouldn't do photos with it, and said, I'm not the champion. And we still listed him as champion until we really, really understood. Other guys made a comment into a microphone like Henry Cejudo, and by Tuesday, man, they were no longer the champion of the world. Like, it's one of those things that, as unlikely as it is that Dustin would beat Islam and then say, I'm done, it's definitely on the table. 100% that's on the table. And if Dustin was to lose to Islam, which is the only other possible outcome, this isn't rocket science. You're either going to win or you're going to lose. Those are the only two possible outcomes. Would he have the hunger and would he find the drive to pick himself and come back for somebody else that wasn't a champion or wouldn't get him in line for a championship, including a payday against McGregor? And according to Dustin, the answer to that is no. Does Conor want to win? Does Conor want to beat Michael Chandler? Does Conor want to be a fighter? Does he want to stay involved in this community? Does Conor want to re-up his contract and has two fights left? Does he really want to go somewhere and box Manny Pacquiao? Is Conor serious about competing? And of course we're going to ask that question. And if you're a sympathizer with Conor, you're of course going to say yes. Now, as much as I appreciate that, here's the problem. Somewhere around the early 90s, this crazy concept came in that this sport, and many sports in life in general, but this sport is 80% mental. Now, you could apply that to baseball and football and basketball and relationships. You could apply that. Somewhere this idea came, though, that it's more mental than it is physical. And somehow that crazy and untrue idea has stuck around 30-some years later. I mean, here we are, and you'll hear people say that and regurgitate it, and there's no truth to it at all. So that's why I asked you, does Conor want this? Does he want to be here? And if you're a sympathizer, you might say yes. But, well, okay, but hold on. That doesn't matter. I mean, your words don't matter. Show me. You can prove this. This isn't a debatable thing. Oh, yeah, he wants it. He's hungry. If he feels it down here in his gut. He's never wanted something more. Oh, if he doesn't win here, he doesn't get a new contract. Like, you can do all that speculation that you think might add to a drive, but I really don't need to hear a single word. It's physical. Is Conor working out twice a day or not? If he's working really, really hard, but it's one time a day, then the answer is no. He doesn't want this. So let's just start with that. Is he working out two times a day? Is one of those workouts on his own? Now, that doesn't be a hard and fast that nobody else can be there, but boy, it's damn close. If you are in a team environment twice a day, you don't qualify to answer the question with a yes when I ask you if you're working out twice a day, right? There's byproducts. There's certain rules here that if you compete, you'll know them. Let me give you a silly example. I'm jumping around, but I'll just give you an example. You're warming up. You're warming up for a sport. How do you know when you're warm? How do you know when you're warm and I don't need to go anymore? Versus I get done and, God, did I do enough? You want to know how? Did you take a trip to the bathroom? There is no warm-up that is complete without one trip to the bathroom and one trip to the water fountain. If you have not done those things, keep warming up. And I only bring that to you is, you got two workouts a day, yes or no? That's physical though. Did that happen, yes or no? Is one of them by himself, which doesn't have to be literal, but it's close. You might have a coach there, but in the apparatus that you're doing, you're not pushing and pulling with somebody, you're not in a group environment. It's extremely important you do this. There's coaches in college, by the way, that will train their team twice a day, every day, and they can't figure out why the team's not in shape. They'll get up in the morning and they'll sprint them at 6 a.m. And they'll know no weather team is doing that. And then they'll go in the afternoon at 3 o'clock and they'll work them really hard for 2 hours, which is what other teams are doing. So, okay, we got this afternoon walk and that's a push, but then we're getting ahead because we're doing this 6 a.m. sprint and they can't figure out why their guys are getting tired. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but just so you understand, whether you're the hardest worker in the world, the hardest worker on earth, the one that deserves it the most, only means you're the hardest worker in your workout room. It's all that you see. You would have no idea about the guy in a cave on a farm in Russia. You'd have no idea what he was doing. You only know what you see. If you're the hardest worker in this room, you can then believe that you're the hardest worker there is. Which is why if you're a coach and you get guys together and the guys are just like the animal kingdom and they're looking around, they know who outworked who. Which also means, aside from one guy who gets to be that, everybody has now failed. You brought your team in for an extra workout and they all failed because you made them fail because you set up the workout. If a guy goes in and works out on his own, see, now it's a secret. Now it's an advantage. Now he's doing something. He knows something. He paid a price higher than. And he can fill in the blanks, but he convinced himself for all of the globe, that one little workout room, that little space in your garage when your alarm got and you went in there alone. When the trainer came to your house or you went to his and no one else was there but you, him, and the elliptical. So I don't really need to hear that Connor still wants it. I would see it. I would see it. And I would start there. Is he in the room twice a day, every day? If you say yes, great. It's one of those workouts on his own. That would be my next question. Now, it's calories in versus calories out. There's no other way to lose weight. Go check out yourself a book. The great Dr. Parsons. Yours truly. It's called the six-pack. Called the four-pack revolution. Six packs. Or for drug addicts and teenagers. That's what the book's called. Go look it up if you'd like. Or if you don't want to support old Chael, let me get you to the point. You want to gain weight? Consume more calories than you burn. You want to lose weight? Burn more calories than you consume. Why do I bring that in? Because it's extremely troubling when anybody goes up a weight class. You wonder how. How did you gain weight? How are you now a welterweight when you were a lightweight? And there's not a tricky answer to this. There's either I'm working as hard now as I used to, or I'm not working as hard now as I used to. There's not an in-between. So what I'm telling you, I want you to show me, these are the things, the insiders. This is what they would know. Now, there is room for it because we don't just lose weight in this sport. We do something unique called cut weight. So there's answers as to how you could change weight classes. I'm just suggesting for you, it is more than words, for sure. And people don't get better at something by not doing it. And the first step to failure, number one, is when you say, I'm going to train smarter, not harder. Always go with harder. But there becomes a point where you can't. Becomes a point where you're just not motivated enough. Becomes a point where you don't have the discipline. You had it and you used it. You fired those rounds. You pulled that chamber, man. You were great. You were great for 10 years and you used it and you sacrificed. You didn't go to any party. You did everything right. You pushed through. And there's other times where you start training smarter instead of harder. The two-a-days become one-a-day and that time alone in the garage early in the morning starts to get carved out. You're going to maximize your time, and that comes in the afternoon. That's the harder session. That's the one you're going to choose. You're going to learn to let your hair down just a little bit because rest is as important. Rest and recovery are just as important as training. They're not even remotely close to as important, and I mean not even remotely close. They're the words of an idiot, and there's a lot of idiots in the space. And if a new idiot in the space wants your 10%, which you're currently giving to a different idiot in the space, the new idiot has to come in and tell you things that the current idiot doesn't. So you start with all the mechanics and the mechanisms and 20 seconds on and 10 seconds off, and you sell a guy on the idea of heart rate, and this stuff's all going to work. You're going to sell them on proteins and grams, and you're going to convince them about carbohydrates and the difference between bad carbs and good carbs and fructose versus high fructose. Like, you're going to do all of these things, but eventually the guy's going to be smart enough. He's going to know what you're saying. As soon as he knows what you're saying, the scam doesn't work anymore. So you've got to change it. There's a period of a time's guy's career when he wants to hear things that he doesn't want to hear. He's going to go with the guy that is willing to tell him what he does not want to hear, that's going to make him do what he doesn't want to do, because somewhere deep down, he knows that's the right answer. Then there's another time in a guy's career where he's going to go with the guy that tells him what he does want to hear, which is, we can be just as successful, in half the time. I can get you in just as good a shape by doing less. I can get you as strong as you've ever been by not lifting weights. I can make your cardio and your speed just as good when 170 pounds as you could at 155 pounds, which is physically impossible. So when I asked you, does Connor want it? I just talked about Connor right now because it's a name that you know, but it's every guy on the roster. It's every guy that's coming into the roster. It's every guy that's ever been washed out of the business that is no longer on the roster. They all have to go through that. And asking how bad somebody wants, it doesn't matter. That was made up by your teachers, parents, coaches, and you're probably regurgitating to the next generation about it's how you feel. It doesn't make a bit of difference how you feel. In any sport, there is nothing anywhere in any rule book where you can get a point for feeling a certain way. You feel good, you get a point. You don't feel good, they take a point away. It doesn't work that way. Who wants it more? Who believes in themselves more? None of these things will score a point. Hit that guy more times than he hits you. And you wonder how you're going to do that? You're going to have to be quicker, stronger, tougher, smarter, and you're going to get that in the training room, and you're going to get that in that second workout in your garage on your own 5 days a week, or you're not. So when I ask you, does he want it? Just like with anybody else, I'm not actually asking you a question. Is he training twice a day? Is one of those workouts on his own? Yes or no? You all, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you that if you want to support this show, you can leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or submit a rating on Spotify. No fights this weekend, but I do hope you enjoy your Memorial Day. I'm going to be back on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.